So in session 8, we're going to start to bring everything together and really talk about how to help your teen get accepted into great colleges. First, I'm going to do a quick review again of some of the main points, and then I'm going to add some new details, especially when we get into discussing how to help your child do the most scary part of the application process, which is how to write essays that authentically present who they are and help them stand out. In the guide, I've broken up the main points into 8 key concepts. Again, some of this is review from other sessions, but I want you to see how it all fits together. Key concept number 1 revolves around 3 things. 1, it is not about doing more things. 2, it is about being interesting. And 3, it's about match. Again, my philosophy is for students to do quality activities over quantities of activities. I would much rather have students do things that really interest them and go deep into those activities than simply do a bunch of different things because they think that it looks good for college. Now, of course, if a student loves all the activities, I wouldn't advocate giving them up necessarily. But as I've discussed, focusing on 1 or 2 activities can bring much greater results. Now, no matter what your child's GPA and test scores are, there are going to be 1,000 other students with those same numbers. So there's got to be reasons why one college will take one student over another. And I've seen over the years that colleges like students who are authentically interesting. And by this, I mean students who self-initiate activities. Students who think outside the box and pursue interests in unique ways. Students who are also authentic in their applications so that when an admissions representative reads the essays, reads the recommendations, and looks at the activities, everything seems to fit together in a genuine way. It also helps when a student's interests match what a college offers. Several years ago, I had a student who called me when he was a senior and said, "Danny, I don't want to apply to Stanford. This application is way too difficult and I'm not going to get in, so why would I waste the time?" And I told him, "You are applying to Stanford and I don't want to hear anything more about it." And the reason I told him that was that he didn't realize that what he had as an interest was a perfect match for one of Stanford's programs. Now, this student wasn't the best in his class, but he was a good student. He had good grades and fairly good test scores. But he also had 4 years of graphic design experience. He took art classes during the year on the weekends and then additional design classes in the summers. He worked for his school's newspaper and yearbook designing layouts, and he would design websites and logos for his friends in his spare time. By the time that he applied to college, he had a portfolio of his different work that we submitted to Stanford, which was a perfect match for their product design program. Now, the boy actually did get into Stanford, where he went on to eventually meet another student named Bobby, and they came up with an idea called Snapchat. So when people wonder how Snapchat came about, it really came from the fact that Evan was an outside-the-box designer from the time that he was little. In fact, in his personal statement, he wrote about how his parents didn't let him watch much television growing up, so he ended up creating things, tearing apart a computer and putting it back together, and even building pillow forts out of cushions of his family's couch where he would create elaborate imaginary scenarios. In other words, he grew up using his imagination and developed his creative talents. So it's no wonder that he would go on to create something new in the world because that's who he was authentically. Evan's story also illustrates key concept number 2, which is my fundamental belief that if you don't ask, you can't get. Now, for those of you who have heard me speak before, I often tell my personal story. I went to high school in Southern California, where only 17% of my graduating class went on to college. Actually, 25% of my graduating class will at some point go to prison. So when I was a senior, my principal called me into her office and said, "Danny, I heard that you want to go to Stanford." And I said, "That's correct." And she said, "Well, you're not getting in." I said, "Gee, thanks." She said, "Look, it's not you. You're a good student. But our high school has such a poor academic reputation. We've only seen 2 kids get into Stanford in the last 35 years, and they were incredible athletes, and you're not one of those. So why don't you just apply to local schools?" Now, I understand why she told me this, but I ignored her and applied anyway, and as you know, that's where I went. But if I had listened to what an authority figure told me, I might not have ever even applied to Stanford. And in fact, a lot of my students who end up at some of the top schools in the country initially don't believe that they can get in because someone has told them that it's, quote, impossible. So again, if you don't ask, you can't get. Having said this, my key concept number 3 is, it's only college. As I've stated previously, I have worked with thousands of students, which means I have students who have attended large state schools, I have students at small liberal arts schools, I have students at mid-sized private schools, I have students with C averages, I have students who are really great in art and not so good in math, and I have straight A students. At the end of the day, I believe college is what a student makes of it. The name of a school, as I've mentioned, really has no bearing on a student's level of eventual success or even level of happiness. Additionally, for students who don't get into their top choice, they end up being just fine. Remember, we're not saying that college is like an arranged marriage. The worst case scenario is if they don't like a place, they can transfer. But the truth is that once a student finds their friend group, say 5-6 friends that they really bond with in college, it typically becomes really enjoyable. Now, sometimes it takes students a week to meet their friends in college. Sometimes it takes a semester. Sometimes it takes a whole year. So I have talked with students who want to come home after the first week, or they say that they are miserable during the first month, but then come back to me second semester and say that they don't want to transfer because they've met their friends and they love it. Sometimes it just takes a while to adjust to such a big change, such as living on their own and going to a school with students they've never met or been around before, especially if they've grown up in one town their entire life. So the more that students can understand that college is amazing, no matter where they go, the easier the process is. And when they talk to students who go to different schools and hear just how great of a time they are having, they can get excited about their options rather than get tunnel-visioned towards just one. Concept number 4 is about encouraging new interests. Students should think big and ask, ask, ask. And I encourage students to do these things not simply because they want to get into a certain college, but because it's a much better way to live life. To get a student to feel confident in themselves, to try new things and to have those things succeed, to venture out and expose themselves to new ideas and get excited about those ideas is what I absolutely love. And like we've talked about, asking for help from really accomplished adults or asking for internships and jobs can result in extraordinary opportunities that most students don't even know are available. The key is to help your child stay persistent and keep asking. You know, when we're all little kids, we have no problem asking for something from our moms. In fact, you will see this concept all the time in a grocery store. A little boy or a little girl might keep asking their mom over and over and over again for something until she finally caves in. Well, in a certain way, the same is true for a teenager. The more that they ask, the more that they can get opportunities that can help them truly become interesting and stand out as applicants. Key concept number 5 really involves finding the colleges that are matches. And there's really 4 main ways that I suggest students do this. Number 1, I usually have my students read about colleges. In the resource section of the guide for this session, I list all the resources that I personally use. The first resource is called the Fisk Guide to Colleges, and it has about 400 schools with 3 or 4 pages per school that simply describe what it's like to attend. So what the students do on the weekends, what the best academic programs are, what the dorms are like, etc. And what I have students do is have them read 3, 4, 5 schools a week, and then have them underline or highlight things that they like, things that they don't like, and things that they don't understand, so they can start to consider what is important to them. And you can answer any questions they might have. And the reason I have them highlight the book is because when they go on to write an essay such as, "Why do you want to go to our school?" they can refer back to the book and remember what stood out for them initially. Also, if they have an interview, they can again refer back to what originally stood out for them. They can also use a resource called unigo.com, which is a student review website. It's kind of like Yelp for colleges. If a student goes onto the homepage of a particular school after searching for it, they can scroll down to the bottom and click on any number of questions that hundreds of students have answered. Questions include, what's a student's overall opinion of the school? Or, what's the stereotype of the students at the school, and are the stereotypes true? And what is the worst thing about the school? By reading these comments, students can start to understand what it's really like to go to school there. Consequently, by using both the Fisk Guide and unigo.com, students can get a bit of both of an objective and a subjective look at the places they're interested in. Then I encourage students to visit college, and like we've talked about, even if a student can't visit colleges across the country, they can visit different types of schools locally so they can get a sense of what a big public school is like or what a smaller liberal arts school is like, and they can really see firsthand the differences between types of institutions. And like I mentioned, I encourage visiting students to talk to actual students on campus and ask them what their experiences are. A visiting student can learn more in 10 or 15 minutes from a group of actual college students than from the entire tour. Now, key concept 6 is about doing little things that can help a student stand out. These are things that most teenagers don't consider. A lot of times that I hear that a student doesn't like his or her counselor or can't get a hold of his or her high school counselor, and so they just figure it's not worthwhile in making an effort anymore. But the truth is that it's very important for students to establish relationships because a high school guidance counselor or college counselor has to write a letter for most students who want to go to four-year colleges called the Secondary School Report Form. So the more a high school counselor knows your child, the more that they can write about them. And yes, most schools have questionnaires that students need to fill out that help their counselors write that letter. But obviously, a personal relationship cultivated over the course of a year or more is much better because a school counselor can then get to know a student personally. And the same thing goes with admissions representatives themselves at colleges. I often have students go onto a college's website and simply search for the admissions representative that was responsible for their area or their high school. And most of the time they can find this information on a school's website, but you or your child can also simply call a college and ask who's responsible for their high school. And then I have students write that admissions officer an email, usually in junior year, that simply introduces themselves, making sure that the representative is the right person to be corresponding with, and asking them if they simply can stay in touch and ask any questions as they go through the admissions process. Rarely have I seen an admissions officer say no to this request or not get back to a student. This is because their job is to find students in their area who are interested in the school. So once a student can establish a relationship with the admissions person via email, well, then, say every 6 or 8 weeks, a student can follow up with updates about what's going on in their life. They can engage the admission officer by asking a question or two. And then, if the admissions officer comes to the teen's high school, or at least comes to speak to in the area, the teenager can then go to introduce themselves to the admissions representative and say, "Hi, I've been the one that's been writing you." And of course, because so few students do this, the admissions officer usually remembers the student and cultivates that relationship even more. So it's kind of like getting a job. As you know, when you get a job as an adult, you really don't get the job based off of your resume. You usually get the job based off the interview because that's when you get to have a one-on-one interaction. Similarly, if an admissions officer has been corresponding with a teen over the course of a year and has met that teen in person and knows that teen, well, when they see the application, there's going to be a sense of familiarity with that student, and that can make a difference between standing out among students who simply send in their applications cold and who the admission officer has no relationship with. Now, some admissions officers don't respond, and some admissions officers will say that they don't care about what's called demonstrated interest. But that doesn't matter for me, because this isn't about whether a student is demonstrating an interest in college necessarily. It's about establishing that personal relationship. Now, speaking of relationships, the same thing is true with college recommendations. Most students don't realize how important their teacher recommendations can be. Teenagers also don't understand that their teachers often observe and know more than they think that they do. So, in other words, if a boy is goofing off in class but has an A, he might think that his teacher is going to write him a stellar letter of recommendation. Now, this may be true, but the teacher has been observing all year that this student hasn't been truly engaged in class. And most teacher recommendations are anonymous. So it's not that a teacher is necessarily going to write a bad letter just because, well, a teacher won't say yes if they don't have something good to say. But it also doesn't mean that this boy's letter is going to help him stand out. On a lot of college applications, there is an actual recommendation form that asks a teacher to rank a student relative to the rest of the class. So if the student is in the top 25% of the class, top 10% of the class, top 5% of the class, top 1% of the class, or is one of the top students the teacher has ever seen, those are boxes that a teacher has to check. So just because a student has an A in a class, there's more to it than that. And so a student should authentically work on cultivating a relationship with their teachers throughout the year, starting on day one. Again, my philosophy about how to approach school is to have students really start strong at the beginning of the year because teachers psychologically make a decision about what kind of student a teenager is based on the first couple of weeks of the year. Therefore, a smart student will start off by doing his or her homework and trying to do the best job possible so that if a bad day comes along, the teacher will probably let it slide because they know that the student has been trying. Unfortunately, a lot of students do the opposite, where they think that the first 2 weeks are easy and they don't really try that hard. From then on, it's an uphill battle for the rest of the semester or even the rest of the year as the student tries to beg the teacher to give a few more points or tries to get on the teacher's good side. The fact is that a student can truly benefit in the college admissions process by keeping in mind that they're probably going to have to ask one or two junior year teachers plus their counselor for recommendations. In other words, cultivating good relationships are the key. Now, for me, there are three fundamental actions students should take when cultivating relationships. One is to be truthful. The second is to be engaged. And the third is to be on time. So if a student has an appointment with his or her high school counselor, I would suggest that you put it up on the refrigerator or put it in your calendar so that you can help remind your teen of the appointment. Sometimes students get so busy that they forget, and while that's probably not a big deal, counselors are also very busy, and they don't particularly like it when students show up late or they miss the appointment, because it shows them that a student's not taking things very seriously. The same thing goes when a student has an appointment with a teacher. If the student makes an appointment to see a teacher but comes completely unprepared, doesn't have any questions, and just expects the teacher to give up answers, the teacher is not really going to feel the urge to help that student. But if a student is engaged, comes up with questions that are already thought of beforehand, there's a much greater possibility that the teacher is going to give that student extra help. And of course, if a college counselor asks a student what he or she is looking for in a college, it's important for that student to be truthful and honest with the counselor, because that's the way that they can then advocate for the student if a college calls and asks about that student, which does sometimes happen. Now, that brings me to key concept number 7, which states that students should have real reasons that they want to attend colleges. And one of the most important things that I will say in this program is that the way to help your child become an extraordinary college applicant and get accepted into great colleges is to help them do in-depth research into the schools. So beyond the FISC guide and Unigo.com and the visits, the absolute key is to have a student sit down for 45 minutes or an hour and get into a college's website. What I have my students do is open up a Google Doc or a Word doc and title it the name of a college. Then anything that that student finds on the college's website that is interesting can be copied and pasted into the document. The problem is that college websites are often extremely difficult to navigate. They're confusing, the links don't work, and most students don't know how to research, or they burn out on the process because they get frustrated when they can't find things. But that's exactly why doing research into colleges is so important and works so well. You see, many colleges have an essay question that asks why a student wants to attend, and most students write a generic answer. Something like, well, I like USC because it's a beautiful campus, and I love the spirit, and my friends said that the business school is really good, and I think I'll really thrive there. Well, that's a fine answer, but you're telling a school something they already know. Instead, what I found to be the most effective is that a student talks about his or her interests academically and extracurricularly, and then points to specific programs, majors, classes, and professors that will allow that student to continue pursuing those interests in college. Therefore, not only does an admissions officer come to learn about a student and their interests, but they also know that a student has taken the time to really look at a school and how it matches up to those interests. Now, I've actually had admissions officers tell me that if they can't decide between two students, they will let the "Why do you want to go to our school?" essay decide. So it's kind of really a big deal. The same thing goes with interviews. One of the main questions an interviewer will ask a student is, "Why are you interested in our school?" And the more specific a student can be in that answer and the more research they have done, the more they're going to stand out. Okay, key concept number 8 is really about how parents and students can best survive this process. You know, there's a lot of pressure on students about getting into college that parents might not fully be aware about, especially those teens who want to go to selective four-year colleges. By the time students enter into their senior year, one of the main topics that students talk about is college admissions, and where they're going to apply. And then a student, say, goes to Thanksgiving where every single relative is asking the student, "So where do you want to go to college? And what do you want to do with your life?" And most students have no idea. So they start to feel this pressure because everyone's asking them about something that they don't want to think about yet. They also may be secretly scared to leave home and do this whole thing called college. On the other hand, parents obviously want what's best for their child. They want their child to be happy, and they've spent 18 years bringing a child to the point where they now have to let them go. And that's an emotional time for parents. So what happens is this pressure often builds up between the student and the parent, and things can start to get a bit stressful. When I have students and parents in my office, I try to help them understand that each of them have different stresses that the other one might not know about. Therefore, if you, as a parent, can take some of the suggestions in this program and simply be kind, and also be patient with your child as they go through the process, you will be able to better deal with the inevitable inevitable emotional roller coaster. In fact, if I can get a parent and a student to agree to certain things, that doesn't mean there won't be stress, that there won't be disagreement, but it sets the parent and the student on a path to trying to empathize with each other and hopefully make things a little smoother. So, like I said in the early part of the program, if a parent and a student can agree that the parent isn't going to pester their teen about college every day, but instead agree to meet, say, once a week or once every other week for 20 minutes just to review what needs to be done for college, it can make a huge difference in keeping peace in the household. Of course, the more a parent knows about the process and what's coming, the more a teenager will hopefully listen to you as a parent. The problem comes in is when a parent doesn't know about the process, doesn't know about the deadlines, doesn't know a lot about what I'm covering in this program. Because when a parent like this says, "Hey, have you started your essays yet?" and the essays haven't even been released, well, then the student shuts down and doesn't want to talk about anything with the parent. So I encourage parents to not only use the suggestions in this program, but also use the resources. I also suggest you learn about colleges yourself so that you know what the requirements are and you know what the deadlines are. That doesn't mean that you have to do everything for your son or daughter. In fact, I'm a big believer in helping them become responsible through this process. But the more you know, the easier it will be for everybody. And that brings me to one of the most important and, unfortunately, one of the most stressful parts of the college admission process, which is how to write the college admission essay. Now, some colleges only have one essay called the personal statement. Some have two, three, or even six essays. But the truth of the matter is that they are all actually easy to write. The challenge is actually not in the writing. It's in coming up with the ideas and actually getting started. So what I want to do for the next few minutes is give you an overview of what colleges actually look for in essays, and then how to help your child get started in brainstorming and start writing these essays early to take the fear out of the process. In the guidebook, I've actually included part of the brainstorming process I do with students. I encourage you to go through and read it yourself and actually even try the exercises, because when you try writing them yourself, you'll see the challenges that come up in your brain, and you can then better understand the challenges your child is going to face when trying to do the same thing. So in the guidebook, you will see a section that says crafting standout essays, and I always start with three main keys. The first is to tell a story. So if you can imagine yourself in the shoes of an admissions officer, you're probably 25 to 35 years old. No, admissions officers are not just old white guys with a big rubber stamp that says, "No, no, no." Instead, these are usually recent college graduates or relatively young people who spend 6 weeks a year locked up in their house reading up to 2,000 applications and essays in a row. So you can imagine that reading the same essay over and over again, even if it's on a good topic, starts to get a little tiresome. Thus, the way to stand out is to tell a story or a series of stories, because everyone likes storytelling. Look, if I came back from a trip and I gave you a point-by-point itinerary of everything I did, at 8:15 I woke up, and at 8:30 I went to the bathroom, and overall it was a really good trip and I learned a lot of things and it was really valuable. Well, that's not nearly as exciting as if I said, "Oh my God, there was this one time we were going to look at some wildlife and we're driving this old beat-up yellow Jeep that must be 40 years old and it's creaky as we're driving down this dirt path. And suddenly it starts to rain. And soon the road gets really slippery and muddy, and all of a sudden, before we know what's happening, an animal slides into the side of the Jeep, causing us to slip off the road. Now we're suddenly upside down and everyone's screaming." Okay, see, that visual is something that you might want to hear more about. So it's really easy to write a great personal statement simply by getting a student to tell a story of something that happened to them, that taught them some kind of lesson, or a time that revealed something to themselves that they didn't know about. Now, I'm going to give you an example or two in a minute, but in addition to telling a story or stories, the next key is that students should use concrete details. So instead of writing, "Wow, I really like cereal," instead they can write, "You know what? I love 3-day-old Frosted Flakes." See, the reason why concrete details makes good writing is because concrete details help the reader relate. So if a student wants to write about how she loves mountain biking and writes, "I really love mountain biking because it's a lot of fun and it's exhilarating," this is not as memorable as describing how she is riding a mountain bike down a dirt path at 30 miles an hour, feeling her hands go numb as she vibrates over rocks and ruts and yells as she feels the exhilaration that comes with flying off a jump into the air and then cleanly landing. You see, by painting a picture with concrete details, a student can bring the reader into the essay. Now, the purpose of a personal statement, or really any college essay, is to show a student's personal qualities. In other words, I like to say that a college essay completes the application. So, for example, if I have a student who loves to dance, and she has dancing on her activities list, and she has a recommendation from her dance instructor, and she's applying into a dance major, I don't want her to write about dance in her personal statement, because an admissions officer will already know that about her. Instead, I would prefer that she wrote about some other aspect of herself that wouldn't necessarily be known simply by looking at the application. So, for example, I had a student last year who was a very good singer, yet she wrote about how she loves watching videos on YouTube about theoretical math. She's not even a great math student, but she explains how she's just fascinated by complicated patterns in math because she realized that that's how she also hears music. So writing about math videos gives an admissions person insight into the way that her mind works, and it gives context into why she loves her music so much. Or I could even use the example of my own personal statement. It was May of my junior year, and swimming season was already over, but my water polo coach wanted to start training for the next season. Well, considering that we didn't have a game until the following year, I asked him if I could get out of practice early on 2 days so I could go home and study for my AP test. He said he'd think about it, and then later that afternoon, he brought all of us out on the pool deck. Well, for a good 15 minutes, he berated me and told me that I was a worthless piece of crap, except that he didn't say crap. He said that I shouldn't have any friends and that I was pretty much worthless. He then made us swim a drill that took 45 minutes, after which he promptly kicked me off the team. Well, I went home and was obviously really angry, but I also realized that my coach had a temper. This is a guy who had broken like 30 pairs of sunglasses during a season after throwing them on the ground. This is a guy who had a wooden paddle who used to hit us in a wet Speedo. Yeah, if a player did anything wrong, he would make them get out of the pool and hold onto the lifeguard stand when he applied the paddle. Was that legal? Probably not, but he did it anyway. So I decided that I would go the next day and just see if everything might have blown over. Maybe he was just having a bad day. Well, he didn't say anything when I got to practice, but when I was in the water, my girlfriend walked out of the back of the gym and he yelled over the pool and started talking more trash about me to my girlfriend. At that point, he turned to me and said, "Hey, Danny, do you still need to study?" And I said, "Honestly, yeah, kind of." So he kicked me off the team again. Well, that night I went home and told my dad, and my dad was an old school Chicago guy's guy. So he stood up and said he was going over to the school immediately. And I said, no, Dad, that's not going to solve anything. You getting into a fight with my coach is not going to help the situation. And I told him that I would handle it myself. So I went back to school the next day and I went up to my coach and said, "Hey, can I talk to you?" And we went outside of the pool. In fact, I remember we sat on the orange lunch tables. And I said, "You know, coach, I want to thank you for everything that you've done for me over the last couple years, but I think it's probably best if I don't play for you." And he said, "I respect your decision." He shook my hand and we were done, right? Wrong. He then gave me an F in swimming. He then systematically went around and talked to all my teachers about me. My college counselor called me into her office and said, "Why is your coach belittling you to all your teachers? Doesn't he know that the faculty had just voted you the best junior in the class?" And when I told her the story, she said, "You know, just stay away from him." Yet it still wasn't over because in the beginning of my senior year, the director of student council basically told me that I had an attitude problem after I simply asked a question. I couldn't figure out what was going on until I realized that he was best friends with my coach. It took me a matter of months to turn that relationship around, and the director would end up writing one of my letters of recommendation. So all I did for my personal statement was tell this story. And at the end of the essay, I remember writing that I learned that just because you're an adult doesn't make you right. Now, I didn't say in the essay that I was mature for my age or that I handled conflict in a certain way. I simply told this singular story. But I hope that you can see in the story that you learned things about my character that you wouldn't necessarily have known if you just looked at my application and saw that I had suddenly stopped swimming and playing water polo and instead started a mock trial team when I was a senior. Therefore, not only does the essay give insight into who I was, but it also explained why the change in my activities took place. So in the guidebook, I have included a bunch of pages that are designed to help your child come up with stories to help them write their essays. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing because I do workshops that take a couple of days to go through the exercises. However, I did want to include some of them for you because even if your child just reads what is written and writes on the lines that I provided, they're going to start to generate ideas that they can note on the last page. Now, I will also add that there's really two ways to take stories and write the long essay called the personal statement. One is that they can take an overall story and just tell the story in and of itself the same way I did with the water polo coach story. Or they can tell a singular story and then explain why they're telling me that story. So, for example, I had a student who told a story about how she was volunteering in a health clinic in Colombia and the electricity went out, so she had to run around trying to get ice to cool down this little boy they had on the operating table or else he would die. She started with that story because it then allowed her to discuss how much she cares about becoming a doctor and working in developing countries. Because she learned firsthand that medical care in third world countries is not nearly as good as it should be, she explains how she wants to take action to help fix it. You see, in this way, the story can help pull a reader in and allow a student to talk about a passion or an interest or a lesson that she learned in a much greater way. But a student can also take multiple little anecdotes and make them all relate to a theme. Each anecdote can show a different part of a student's personality. So, I have a student who wrote three anecdotes about her experiences with her father in which he teaches her a life lesson. In the fourth paragraph, she explains that her father passed away 6 months before, and she recently had a dream where her father was stroking her face. She writes how she woke up and found herself stroking her own face and realized that the lessons that her dad taught her would stay with her the rest of her life. Now, not everybody's essay has to make an admissions officer cry, but it was a very outside-the-box essay because none of her anecdotes seemed to have any connection between them until you got to that last paragraph where she tied them all together. And by doing so, you learn the lessons that she learned from her dad, and therefore you learn about her as a student. Finally, on the last page of the guide, I have included some of my favorite resources that I use with my own students, including a link to the FIS guide and a link to unigo.com, which is that student review website. I've also included a link to a new website called uvisit.com. uvisit is a virtual tour website where you can literally walk through a college campus and see what it looks like. They don't have a lot of schools, but they keep adding more and more. So I encourage you to look at the colleges yourself and then encourage your teen to also do so. I've also included a book that specifically lists all the different programs available for students with learning differences or disabilities. In fact, while you will find that almost every college these days has some sort of office that is there to help students with accommodations, you'll also see that there's a big range of what kind of help a student can get. Finally, I included a couple of resources for those who are going to apply for financial aid. The first one is www.finaid.org. That's FINAID.org. This is a really good place that you can learn everything about financial aid and scholarships, and you can also use their financial aid calculators to give an estimate of what a typical college will give you if you were to apply. I've also included a link to a book called The Ultimate Scholarship Book. It's a huge book that lists thousands of scholarships. And I like looking at a book better than a website because with a book, you can go through and prioritize which scholarships your son or daughter might best qualify for. Now, I often recommend that a parent be the one in charge of the scholarship book, only because a student will be working on applications and school and often doesn't have the time to look for scholarships. So what a parent can do is go through and mark which scholarships their child is eligible to apply for and then put them in categories based on which involve the least amount of work for the most amount of money. Parents should also be aware that the more specific a scholarship, the easier it is to win. So if there's a scholarship for an oboist from Nebraska, it'll be easier to win that scholarship than the Coca-Cola essay contest where thousands of students apply from all over the country. Whew! Wow, thank you for hanging in there with me, and I hope these strategies and resources will help you. Now, let's both take a break before we move on to session 9, where I will discuss the keys to succeeding in college.